Hello and welcome to the Ship Energy Podcast with me, Ariane Morrissey. This week, I invite you to take a deep dive into the latest data on shipowners' orders for new-build vessels capable of using alternative fuels, data which is compiled by classification society DNV. Those data points matter because they're a key indicator of what new fuels individual companies are deciding to invest in for their fleets, and therefore of the direction and speed of the energy transition in shipping. So we'll try to make sense of the main trends in the past year and what we can expect going forward with Jason Stefanatos, Global Decarbonization Director at DNV. Welcome to the podcast, Jason.
Thank you very much. Very glad to be here.
So, at first glance, if we look at the total number of alternative fueled vessels ordered in 2025, the first thing that's quite striking is a sharp drop, because those orders were 47% lower than the previous year. However, it's also interesting to note that the overall new build market, so including conventional fuels, has fallen as well. So as a proportion of the global order book, the share of alternative fueled ships remained steady at 38% of gross tonnage. How do you read those figures? Is this good or bad news for the energy transition?
That's a very good question. You could see the interpretation of these numbers was quite varying in the various headlines online. You approached it in a very good way. Indeed, the absolute numbers are lower, but in total, the order book is much lower. The new building market has gone to a phase that it's quite expensive to and hard to find slots. So, in general, we have seen a decrease on orders. And as you accurately said, it's the share, the percentage share of alternative fuel vessels is very close to what was in the previous years. There are quite a few parameters that have led to these figures, both for alternative fuels and the entire order book. But if we try to connect it with the regulatory developments, I would say that indeed in April we had a sharp development in IMO, and that made a lot of owners pause. They just waited. And after October, they could resume. And this is evident also with the huge number of orders in terms of GT that were placed in December. I think it's given the drivers that we had in the past, with mainly the drivers for the uptake of the alternative fuels came from the commercial aspect. And these drivers are still there. I think this was an expected response from the market, just to start ordering after the October decision postponement. And we will wait to see what happens next year.
So in proportion, how much of the drop in orders for alternative fueled vessels was caused by that regulatory uncertainty and everything that happened at IMO? And what other factors maybe were at play here?
Yeah, I think that's quite hard to pinpoint. You know, definitely after April, we saw a waiting from the ship owners. To be honest, and from talking to the ship owners, whoever had invested in alternative fuels or had a very clear plan, then they continue to do that. But for the ones that were on the verge or they were, you know, not certain and the business case was not always positive, they just waited. And this was piling up, you know, the people that wanted to order, they were waiting. And after October, all the ones that were on the verge, if it makes sense to go for alternative fuels or not, said, okay, with this delay, I can go for conventional fuel and wait for the next years. Having said that, I think it's since the decision to postpone the decision was taken in October, mid-October, I don't think we had enough time to see the reaction on the actual industry. So it would be quite interesting to see how this evolves in 2026, when there will be enough time for decision makers to actually understand and analyze what happened and how do we move forward, and also to see how the various stakeholders move as well.
It's quite interesting that you say that there was a bit of a hold after April, because April is actually when there was an agreement on the IMO net zero framework. So you could have expected it to go the other way. So how do you explain that?
Yeah, there was an agreement, but not formal adoption. So until there was formal adoption, the ship owners and the general stakeholders and decision makers on vessels that were not clear if they should have alternative fuels or not, they said, okay, let's wait until we have the formal adoption.
And do you see that trend changing in 2026, or do you think we're likely to see another year when orders for alternative fuel ships will be below the levels of 2024, which we have to say were quite record levels?
That is, I think it's quite early to say. As I said earlier, it's there are so many different parameters, and the discussion is no longer a technical discussion, it's geopolitics and, you know, something that goes beyond the technical discussion. So it is very hard to predict. So since we cannot predict, what we can try to do is state the facts, you know, understand what it is there, what is a fact, and then each decision maker can take their own. And since clarity is not there, and we don't expect it to come in bulk in 2026, I mean, it would be a surprise if we have consensus within 2026 and everyone is happy and we have something to go forward. April, the MEPC in April, hopefully will shed some light, will show some signs of where we are heading. Since, as I said earlier, this is on a geopolitical level, many things can happen. So far, after October, we just hear rumors. In the MEPC, we will see some clear signs of where each member state lies. I'm not implying we will have a consensus or a decision. I'm just saying we will have the first formal signs of how this could be evolving in the future. Beyond that, we still have commercial drivers that are there. And that means that for large container ships, car carriers, and maybe cruise ships, it can be expected that they will still drive the uptake. I mean, we didn't see any change the past 2 months. It can be, I cannot predict, but it would not be surprising if this continues, given the fact that it comes from a commercial aspect. Something that is also interesting about next year is that we will have the first ammonia engines being delivered. And hopefully this will give us much more knowledge and understanding and operational knowledge about this fuel. Currently has a lot of challenges to overcome, and it has haters and lovers. So the more facts we get, the less the uncertainty, the more the clarity, and the better decision making we can have.
And now, whenever DNV releases those figures about alternative fuel order books, a lot of people in the industry examine those figures and try to identify winners and losers among the potential fuel options. So of the 275 alternative fuel ships ordered, 188 were for LNG. Is it fair to say that LNG was the big winner in 2025? And if so, what were the main reasons behind this?
I always try to avoid considering this a race with competitors. I think it's too early to decide on who is winning or losing. And also, it creates a competitiveness among the fuels. Well, you know, if we want to achieve the targets that we have set, we want all the solutions on the table. It does not mean that everything will work, but we are too early to shut down solutions or say this is the solution we need to go. And having said that, yeah, there is a very clear high market share of LNG. I think this makes sense given the fact that LNG is the most mature out of the new fuels, the most mature technology. We have had LNG carriers burning LNG for decades. We have had non-LNG carriers burning LNG for years. We have, including the order book, more than 1,300 vessels that are capable. They can burn LNG, not LNG ready. And that goes along with the infrastructure. It's not at the levels of marine fuels, HFO or MGO, but it is there. And EU has some regulations to push for their ports to have LNG as a bunker. We have operational experience, so it makes sense that many go that way. Of course, there was this big discussion at IMO level about the factors behind LNG, especially the well-to-tank, that may, depending on the decision that will be taken in IMO, may make LNG less favorable, fossil LNG. But we also always need to keep in mind that the LNG pathway has also bio or, in general, renewable natural gas in the future options. So this is something that makes LNG more attractive to the decision makers, because they can improve today. It is something that has infrastructure and can provide a solution in the future. Having said that, also methanol had an interesting element this year. We saw the first big wave of bulk carrier orders. This was mainly linked to China's strategic push towards green methanol, both for producing but also for having green methanol available in all or the major Chinese ports, bunkering infrastructure in general. I think that was also interesting, because in the past we mainly saw the large container ships driving the uptake of methanol, and then some car carriers and gradually some cruise ships. So it's interesting to see that bulk carriers also are going that way as well.
Interesting on methanol, actually, because if we look at the total figures of number of orders for methanol, they've actually dropped from 149 in 2024 to 61 last year. So if I hear what you're saying, you don't think it's the beginning of the end for methanol as a marine fuel, but how do you see that evolve going forward?
You know, I think it's too early to talk about the end of any fuel. I mean, all fuels have pros and cons. Some may have challenges in the availability, others in cost, others in the technology, wherever. We were not fast to say that methanol is the only solution when there was this frenzy 2 years ago. And we are not fast to say that methanol is dead. We still consider it to be one feasible solution for specific combination of ship type and size and trade routes and other business conditions. It will make sense. We always have the matter of availability and cost, but this is something that goes beyond the decision making of the ship owners or the ship managers, and it has to do with the fuel production. But it is expected, there are regions in the world that see green methanol production as a way forward, and most probably, if these plans go forward, there will be green methanol available for shipping, at least for some parts of the world. And that is what drives still orders on methanol, and what could shift the balance if conditions change as well.
And if we take a look at ammonia now, there were 5 orders in total for the whole of 2025. Is ammonia slower to take off than you expected?
Personally, no, but I think the industry indeed was hyped with expecting much higher speed of adoption. Personally, I was not that on that note. Ammonia is a fuel that has technical challenges. They can be solved, and they are being solved as we speak. Many the makers, the engine makers, the yards, they are all the designers. They work on those. We have vessels being built. We have vessels that will carry ammonia and burn it. We have vessels that will just burn ammonia. The more we work with that fuel, the more knowledge we gain, the more wise we become as an industry. We were glad with DNV to be the first class society to work on an actual vessel to retrofit ammonia and ammonia fuel system. And we saw hands-on what it takes. So it's not going, we don't expect ammonia to scaling up next year, but it will be gradually increasing. And we see a lot of companies that invest in ammonia also to be pioneering and to gain first-hand knowledge. We see the engine makers having high focus. And also ammonia is a fuel that is being discussed for the land industry as well. So there will be green ammonia available in the future, irrespective if shipping industry demand is there or not. How much and at what price? We can have many forecasts, but it's too early to say, but at least the fuel will be there.
And in those conversations about decarbonization, we often focus on fuels, but the data also contains some quite interesting insights on wind propulsion. So in short, 24 ships were fitted with wind propulsion systems in 2025. That includes new builds and retrofits. That's a slight increase from the previous year when we had 22 installations completed. Is this quite modest increase good or bad news for proponents of wind propulsion in shipping?
Hey, I think it's good news. I mean, just to state first the facts, definitely there is a very high interest. Before we go to the actual installations, we have many, as DNV and also the makers, many requests about understanding the technology. It's not for everyone. It's not for the entire fleet. It has the prerequisite that you need wind. So it is only for the favorable weather routes, weather conditions of the routes of the vessel. Currently, we see a lot of production ramp up that will decrease the cost. And I'm mentioning that because the cost is a challenge on its own. So technically wise, it is a technically feasible solution. We have had installations, we have experience as an industry. We can predict quite accurately if it makes sense for that vessel based on the operating profile or not. But the cost still remains. And that means that ramping up the production, which is what makers are doing now, will decrease the cost. But also, there are many makers that are investigating other ways of operation. Before I note that, just one other note is that the thing with wind is that it is a very good option to go for wind ready. Because unlike the fuels, that fuel-ready notations can be very different range. With wind, it is actual ready. You can have the foundations and the installation on board that will allow the vessel to add one wind sail within 24 hours alongside. So you don't need to go to a dry dock. You don't need to stop the vessel. And this has led to the makers to start investigating other business models that you don't have a wind sail constantly on the vessel, but you can put it on and off depending on the route. Not in every voyage, but let's say you have a vessel operating somewhere that it has no favorable wind, but then it goes to the North Atlantic just to do the transatlantic crossing, then it could make sense that for this period of operation, a wind sail is added and then it's taken off. So things like that can help with the capex heavy nature of the investment. And also, coming back to your comment about the actual rate of uptake, we have to say that the Association of Makers is very active and is doing tremendous work in making sure that the benefits from wind assisted propulsion systems can be achieved, or wind power technology, to be more wide. Having said that, the lack of a monetary incentive can be a challenge for the high uptake, at least for the next years. And this is something that reflects to what we are seeing now, as you mentioned earlier.
So do you expect the uncertainty around the IMO net zero framework to kind of slow down investment in wind? Or on the contrary, could it give it a boost if owners look for other options to reduce emissions instead of new fuels?
Yeah, it could go both ways, but the lack of an additional monetary incentive could be detrimental for the business case of installing wind systems.
I also wanted to take a look at the data per segment, because it's quite interesting to see that the lion's share, or 68% of all alternative fuel orders, came from the container ship segments. So why does it seem immune to the pressures that have led to a bit of a sit back and wait approach in so many other segments?
I think it's a purely commercial drive. It's something that is coming from the cargo owners and the liners. There is a lot of pressure to have net zero transport options, because the end users in some parts of the world, they want to buy greener products, you know, with a green stamp, and they are eager to pay a premium. So this premium can be passed along the supply chain, and that means that the cargo owners and the liners are eager to pay for it, which is one of the main parameters. Beyond that, we're talking about very large vessels with high capex. That means that adding the capex of fuel is not, you know, it's not 50% of the cost of the vessel. It's much smaller in percentage. They are liners in operation. They are not spot vessels. That means that they have specific ports, predefined ports that they can call, and availability can be quite easier compared to a spot vessel that may be calling any port in the world anytime and does not have the flexibility to bunker in specific ports always.
And so do you expect that gap that we see right now between container ships and other segments to widen, or do you expect other segments to catch up?
I think there is a high probability that it will be widening as we go forward, because from our first discussions the past 2 months with many ship owners, whoever has done something and has a decarbonization plan and has a net zero plan, or, you know, just to reduce emissions, they don't have any intention to changing it, because their drivers were already there. The ones that did not have such strong plans, they mainly decide to wait. They are in what I call the positioning phase. So they want to know, they want to understand, to know the condition, the market, and have the knowledge and the technical knowledge, but they will not push the button yet. So if we have these two categories, as we go, the gap will keep widening.
And to finish, we know that there's a lot of unknowns for 2026 about the IMO net zero framework. There's also questions around shipyard capacity. We know that there's EU regulation also evolving. So what are going to be the main trends or the main factors that you will be keeping an eye on this year that will influence or shape the alternative fuel order book for 2026?
Well, that is a very interesting question. I think, you know, all the eyes are turned now to IMO. So this is something that definitely is among the top, the most important items, to see what will happen there, if we will have clarity, either yes or no. You know, now we are on a limbo. We don't know what will happen. So I think this will be one of the most dominant parameters. Also, the reaction of the charterers and the cargo owners. Their position is detrimental. You see, as we discussed already many times, container cargo owners and charterers, they have been driving the uptake just on commercial level. So they are quite dominant on this decision-making process. And since you mentioned also shipyards, this is quite interesting, because we are on a very high season for shipyards. We have quite long and not so cheap slots for owners that want to order today. So this can also have an impact on how flexible the owners can be with their orders, both in terms of price, but also in terms of how eager a shipyard is to change the design, to add things, or to change things. Yeah, I think these are the most interesting elements to have a look. And definitely, when it comes to the fuels per se, the final decision about the factors for LNG will be detrimental. The planned development of phase one structure about methanol, and the operation of the first engines for ammonia. These are the three major topics to see how we'll evolve that. If we have this talk in 1 year from now, hopefully we will know more and we will have some clarity.
Thank you very much, Jason.
My pleasure. Thank you very much as well.